Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. When Penny Abernathy speaks of a new business model, she might as well be saying a new epoch. Till now, the history of media economics has consisted of three of those. The current one began in 1994 with the first online banner ad. We are right now in year 26 of that historical period. The first epoch began in 1605 with a German-language periodical with the zingy name Relation alle Firmen und Gedenkwürdigen Historien. This and the Quaranto newspapers about faraway places that flourished in Europe were financed entirely by subscriptions, and so it was for a century. Then there was the dear departed but very lengthy middle epoch, counted from the placement of the first newspaper ad for an Oyster Bay, Long Island estate in a 1704 issue of the Boston News Letter. That period lasted 290 years, and it was a really good 290 years for newspapers, magazines, radio, and television, which is to say, the entire mass media universe. Cynthia B. Myers is author of A Word from Our Sponsor.
I would say every form of popular culture on broadcasting, specifically from the 30s through the 60s, only existed because an advertiser chose to finance it.
Not to dismiss the spiritual, moral, and environmental costs of the consumer society, but brands and their advertising have, in a very real way, been benefactors of our culture. From the sublime...
Right now, and again in the second half of our show, ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
To the ridiculous.
A horse is a horse, of course, and no one can talk to a horse, of course. That is, of course, unless the horse is the famous Mr. A.
Sure, much ad-supported content was, in the immortal words of former FCC Chairman Newton Minow, a vast wasteland. But dotting the wasteland on TV and the whole media horizon was many a lush oasis, including the entire modern era of journalism. We don't know what might have happened without an advertising market, but we do know it subsidized John Hersey's Hiroshima in the August 31st, 1946 issue of The New Yorker. It subsidized Woodward and Bernstein, and it subsidized everything any living person ever knew about the Berks County, Pennsylvania Board of Commissioners. Cynthia Myers.
I think it is fair to say that advertising has been an incredibly important and significant underwriter of news for a couple hundred years, and it's difficult for me to imagine it not continuing to do so.
Unfortunately, in recent years, no imagination is needed.
The Bay Area News Group, which consists of the Mercury News and East Bay Times, announced furloughs and layoffs today, citing a decline in advertising.
The page has turned for what is a Sacramento area staple. McClatchy, the company that owns the Bee, filed for bankruptcy Thursday.
This week, the publisher of the Herald wrote a letter to readers saying unprecedented challenges are forcing changes. Revenue is down more than 30%. That's forced the paper to suspend its sports and feature sections. 98 of the company's 375 employees have been furloughed or had their hours cut back.
The advertising economy that's propped up the whole shooting match for three centuries has, in fact, turned its attention elsewhere. Thanks a lot, Internet.
Just what is this main artery of the information superhighway?
Every business, no matter how large, no matter how small, will be on the Internet in the year 2000. It's the primary way that people will look up information. It will replace the yellow pages as well.
Oh, there are other structural problems bedeviling the news industry. Recession, massive debt, and widespread public distrust, for instance. But unquestionably, it is the digital revolution that caused blood to flow in the gutters of the media economy, and the newspaper business most of all. Ad revenue peaked in 2005 at $49.4 billion. In 2018, it was $14.3 billion. That's $35 billion, 70% just disappeared, which is the principal reason that since 2006, one-third of U.S. newspapers have disappeared as well.
In many cases, the local publisher had reigned somewhat supreme for decades, and these were businesses that were highly profitable.
Craig Foreman is president and CEO of the McClatchy Company, a newspaper group that in February declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
I will argue that these companies did not move fast enough with the perspective of the digital changes that were already underway from 1995 to 96 to do the things that are required to be successful in this everything is accelerating digital environment in which you need to operate. You could argue that the seeds of the internet's challenge to the newspaper business were planted well in advance of the actual peak revenue year for newspapers, 2006.
The first big blow was Craigslist, which in a few short years decimated the classified ad market, by far the most profitable segment of newspaper publishing. eBay, Monster.com, and the like would soon finish the job off.
Publishers were intermediaries, middlemen.
Jeff Jarvis is a professor of journalism at the City University of New York.
And the internet hates middlemen and killed them. It disintermediated all of them. Because no longer did you have to pay the newspaper $400 to sell your car. You could now put an ad online on Craigslist or anywhere else for free. No longer did the real estate agent have to go through you. They could deal directly with their own website on the internet. So we, as the middlemen who had a chokehold on all of these advertisers, lost out.
Then in the mid-aughts came the so-called Web 2.0 and its avalanche of consumer-generated content. A decade earlier, there had been some tens or hundreds of thousands of publishers, large and small, in the world. Now, suddenly tens of millions, all vying for the same basically finite pool of advertising dollars. And that, says McClatchy's Craig Foreman,
left many of these local news companies behind the times as they struggled to keep up with the digital revolution.
Because publishers of all sizes became tantalized by raw traffic. The astonishing global reach afforded by the internet was a siren call, enticing them to sail toward the shoals. Like Odysseus, they should have resisted by lashing themselves to the mast, but nope, almost all formed a strategy based on monetizing that tremendous reach, giving the content away for free on the expectation that all the extra eyeballs would generate extra ad revenues. And thus, they navigated, one after another, straight into the rocks.
And I think what became apparent to those of us who have been on the digital side of things is that reach alone is not a savior. Reach alone without a backstop of deeply engaged users is not something that will provide a sustainable business.
Because not only had the competition grown exponentially, the vast glut of advertising supply depressed the prices anyone could fetch, which is what publishers mean by going from analog dollars to digital dimes. Legacy publishers, accustomed to 30% profit margins and more, were suddenly confronted with single-digit profits. Or worse. Much worse.
And the presses shuttered to a halt this morning at Missoula's weekly independent newspaper. A staff reporter at the Missoula Independent confirmed to MTN he received a letter from the Missoulian at 7:30 this morning. 20 minutes later, he received a phone call to not report to work.
Not that brands stopped advertising. In that same period, more than $200 billion emerged in the annual world ad economy. But none of that chunk reached the news media. Not Foreman's Sacramento Bee, not the Huffington Post, Slate, BuzzFeed, Yahoo, or any of the digital native pioneers with shiny interfaces and big online audiences. No, that $200 billion doesn't go to any publisher at all.
In business, like it or not, Facebook earnings surged despite a year of scandals as users...
Together, Google and Facebook comprise about 60% of all digital ad dollars, and it is very possible that they will grow their market share through coronavirus.
The Facebook-Google duopoly, it changed everything. As Jeff Jarvis said, who needs media middlemen when you can speak directly to the customer? And not just blather based on a rough guess of the customer's interests. No. Based on your own personal search behavior, Facebook postings, likes, dislikes, the big platforms know more about you than you know about you, which is all brand advertisers ever dreamed of. But here's the thing. Facebook and Google swallow about one-third of the world's advertising dollars, but neither produces any content whatsoever. That bears repeating. None whatsoever. And they certainly don't undertake any journalism at all. If you're interested in news not about Washington politics, pandemics, or the Kardashians, you're increasingly going to have to snoop around for it. If you're looking for news from your state house or county courthouse, you're simply out of luck. And by the way, while according to the News Media Alliance, newspapers get 67% of their traffic through Google and Facebook, they get only 14% of their revenue. All right. So what's to be done about this? Craig Foreman, the prodigal who left the Wall Street Journal at the start of the digital revolution to manage the very digital businesses so disruptive to the news biz, returned 3.5 years ago to lead McClatchy to the promised land. This obliges him to get all leadery and pronounce,
"You cannot be a victim. You have to be able to control the things you can control. You can only change your future. You cannot change the past."
True enough, but the future's a tough road to hoe. If perhaps you think that the problem is printing presses and dead trees and digital publishing is a low-cost money machine, well, not really. The gruesome ad market has also consigned digitally native news sites to unprofitability. Many are financed by venture capitalists whose investments are gradually burning away. And if you think newspapers can simply adopt Public Broadcasting's donor model, like the one that brings you this program, bear in mind that the sum needed to replace advertising amounts to tens of billions of dollars, billions not available in the all-too-finite pool of noblesse oblige. Not to mention putting your local paper in competition with Masterpiece, the Museum, the Opera, and Cancer. So, yeah, if you're conjuring an image of the Grim Reaper and maybe he looks like Mark Zuckerberg, you're not wrong, but it must be said that none of this is a morality play. It's not that the pure good of the analog world has been desecrated by the dark forces of digital evil. That second epoch may have been lucrative and convenient, but it wasn't some sort of divine order of things.
God did not give newspapers and magazines the revenue that they think Google and Facebook took from them.
CUNY's Jeff Jarvis.
And Google and Facebook offered better deals with greater efficiency and more performance to the advertisers we used to rip off. And they gladly ran away from us. And to a great extent, it's entirely our fault. These are things we could have done. We could have figured out community. We could have figured out new ways to present information, but we didn't. And now we're paying that price. Now, the harm to journalism is great, but that harm is almost entirely self-inflicted.
Jarvis isn't entirely pessimistic. To him, the answer is to stop thinking of journalism as a product to be manufactured, and instead, as a service of, by, and for communities. A model for which the very digital tools that have ravaged the news business can serve to recreate it.
I think that we are at the point of scorched earth, and what we have to look for now is how to rebuild something entirely new from the ashes.
A pleasant notion, but in the midst of a pandemic that makes the problems twice as bad, and as someone who fears that our democracy cannot wait for the phoenix to rise, I have a slightly different take. God help us all. God help us all.
Coming up, death and maybe rebirth?
This is On the Media.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.